Well, good afternoon, everybody. Today, we're going to be looking at the instructional planning phases of a particular school year and or event that you would be participating in. A lot of times across the educational spectrums, we lose our become complacent a lot of times with the day-to-day hustles of things that we are called to do, and we lose sight of what instructional planning looks like. Educational research and practice hold many lessons concerning the organizing and operating of schools with three overriding realities. In my first opinion, the first is the successful instructional planning requires the use of experts who envision and direct the teaching and learning process. I think the second possible reality is that a sound instructional plan requires the support of a strong financial plan. And my third would probably be effective instruction requires something inseparable from the first two realities, something like a deliberate plan based on a formal mission and a set of measurable goal statements. I think in conclusion there, while the budget is the fiscal expression of the educational philosophy of a school district, the instructional plan brings together revenue sources in support of expenditures in order to effectuate the school district's total overall missions and goals. District mission and goals, we see those on websites, we see those on statements and things all the time. Mission and goal statements are the cornerstones of educational platforms. I believe that much positive benefits have come from consciously focusing on missions and goals. The primary value has been that once such statements are made public, accountability for performance increases noticeably. Although some individuals may even question the wide sweep of mission and goal statements. And there is also an increased duty, I would say, to school districts when it professes mission statements such as all children can learn to high standards. Although such of these beliefs should be unquestioned, history reveals that schools and societies have not always believed that all children can learn, and the proof lies in the heated debates concerning the value of special education and even some of those old school compensatory programs. Those debates kind of go beyond the value of special education in itself, or even the scope of our conversation today, but we can sufficiently say that a mission statement serves to define and drive the organizational structures and cultures of the school district so that it has the total effect of focusing attitudes and performances on a promise that is made publicly. The same is true of goal statements. In contrast to mission statements, I think, which is meant to be broadly exhortative, goal statements are specific and may be performance-based. For example, some school districts may adopt goal statements such as all children will reach at least the 60th percentile on grade level standardized tests before passing to the next grade, or something like all high school seniors will pass a criterion reference test with a state-approved minimum score, permitting entry into the state's higher education system without remediation, things like the ACT or like our exit exams in high schools and across Mississippi. The range of possibilities for goal statements is endless and seems to be all ever-increasing, as we demonstrated this by the challenging standards that have been embedded within the NCLBA, or, you know, of course, the No Child Left Behind Act, and then Race to the Top programs from our past presidents. But the purpose is simple, to focus the school district on outcomes in the larger context of the stated mission goal. And goal statements have strong budget implications, so much so that budgeting for instruction is central to all planning aimed at carrying out the mission and actionable, measurable, and goal statements. The mission and goal statements also apply to individual schools within a school district. Although it may seem redundant for individual schools to restate school district goals, it is a symbolic for schools to spend time and energy building commitment to the larger organization's aims. Maybe a requirement, however, is that possible each school will create its own mission and goals specific to its unique cultures and needs and student demographics. Although school missions and goal statements will also reflect its program strengths and target the particular needs of its student population. You know, and when we talk about these goals, we then kind of shift it to understanding how school districts can be organized. I think when we talk about these missions and visions of the districts and financial hardships, we got to understand that school districts need some type of organizational structure, especially when you talk about the instructional money and budgeting that you are going to implement within a school district. Instructional budgeting is highly dependent on a school district's organizational design. Although there are many variations, school districts are first driven by central administration's leadership style. Unfortunately, across the state of Mississippi, we have some absolute wonderful superintendents, and then we have some not so much. As a result, the most common organizational design includes varying degrees of centralization, management teams, and site-based leadership. These designs drive most planning and decision-making processes. I think not surprisingly, most decisions in highly centralized school districts are made in a rightly controlled central office environment with budgets closely held at the same level. As a general rule, highly centralized organizations are kind of like committed to line items or program budgeting, and there is usually any attempt whatsoever to make uniform allocations, but schools as an expression of possible, if I could say, even-handedness, possibly. Centralization usually is not absolute. However, in a lot of cases, it can be characterized by the degrees of delegated responsibility. Ultimately, however, delegation of decision-making in such school districts is accompanied by state central reporting and, of course, accountability. I think centralized control has noteworthy benefits and also some drawbacks. I think among the benefits, possibly the concept that the central office is ultimately responsible for everything that happens in the school district, and that top leaders are expected to have a necessary expertise to make every important decision. I think an additional benefit of organizational efficiency, as there is no room for indecisiveness or even disagreements of leaders, are strong. Can cause some strong issues. On the negative side of this, it's obvious facts that decision-making and ownerships are kind of tightly held so that unquestioning endorsements of mission and goals and actions by subordinates are just mandated. I think along with that, you have what we call management teams and then site-based management. And management teams also offer benefits and drawbacks as well. So do site-based managements. No data really exists with regard to how many of the nation's roughly 14,000 school districts are still highly centralized. Many school districts have stepped away from that particular image. I think, indeed, it's difficult to imagine that such a design could continue to exist today, given demands by employees and community members. Possibly having a voice in organizational decision making. You know, I think the impetus modern schools or what you call the modern schools that are aligned are given such responsibility, including management of schools on a daily basis. And I know in several states, laws change drastically a lot of times, and we may not understand exactly how things look, but for the most part, we understand. So a basic overview of the instructional budgeting concepts, if you were to imagine a pie chart, I suppose, or like a pizza, you would see that probably teachers and direct student services are probably going to eat up between 70 and 75% of your budget. I think teacher support is going to show a 2 or 3 percentile in there as well. Maintenance is going to show a 10 percentile, and district administration is going to show a large percentile as well. But for the most part, we're hoping that our teachers and the direct student service, different possibilities we have, will lead and guide us along that. So 70 75% is going to be made up of teachers, possibly. Organization of school money and things of that nature, when you talk about visions and missions of school budgeting, teachers in classrooms, You know, those are going to librarians, counselors, things of that nature, psychologists, social workers, all are going to be considered like a student support staff, which does aid in the instructional practices. So there's a lot to consider when you talk about the visions and missions and budget structuring for instructional purposes. I hope that you have really enjoyed this commentary today, this podcast on the vision and missions of instructional management and budgeting for public schools across the nation and in our state. Remember, you can always contact me through at educationnow1986@gmail.com. And I am Joshua Yeager with your school leadership series.